This episode is sponsored by TransUnion's True Audience Credit Informed Marketing Solutions. TransUnion's True Audience Credit Informed Marketing Solutions help you reach credit prospects when and where they are most likely to convert without compromising your risk tolerance. Visit transunion.com/creditinformedmarketing to learn more about our credit marketing solutions today.
I think Apple may stick with the affluent SKU. Its buy now, pay later product is also more affluent skewing in some ways than some may realize out there. And there's other avenues beyond consumer banking that they can explore. There's wealth management and other things that I think could be on the table. What could derail this juggernaut? I'm not sure, other than some kind of regulatory intervention. And that goes for other kind of financial services paths that we haven't even gotten into.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Banking and Payment Show, a Behind the Numbers podcast from eMarketer, sponsored by TransUnion's True Audience Credit Informed Marketing Solutions. Today is May 30th. I'm Rob Rubin, GM of Financial Services, and your host today. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. The title of today's episode is Apple Pay's Sweet Domination refers to how Apple Pay is looking in the digital wallet space, which is pretty good. I invited back Principal Analyst for Payments at Insider Intelligence, David Morris, to unpack why Apple will dominate digital wallets for the foreseeable future and how everyone else must deal with it. Hey, David, how you doing?
Hey, Rob. Great to be here. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hey, before we get into it, Dave, are you ready for some quickfire questions?
I am indeed, Rob. Shoot.
Have you ever used Apple Pay personally?
I have. Yeah, I'm a convert. Recent.
How recently?
Well, I hate to admit that I went to McDonald's yesterday. I did do that for lunch. You know, I work very hard, Rob, so I shoot out of here, get a little lunch at McDonald's, come back. Apple Pay comes in handy.
I get it. I love their shakes. Do you use any other digital wallets?
Yeah. Historically, the PayPal wallet has been my go-to, but I've found Apple Pay more relevant post-pandemic.
Okay. Now, a question. Why did the digital wallet go on a diet?
Why did the digital wallet go on a diet? I don't know, Rob. Why?
It's terrible. To shed some bites.
Oh.
It's bad I said that.
You know, what's funny is at least you teed that up, Rob, and I had a feeling this was a joke this time. I have evolved since last we spoke. There you
go. Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah.
We have a lot to cover, so let's get right to the headlines. In the headlines, we chat about a top story or two as it relates to our episode. I've chosen two recent stories that we published for the headlines today. The first article, Kroger's apparent about face on Apple Pay, signals sea change. The article highlights that Kroger, which is the fifth largest retailer in the U.S., has until now held out enabling customers to check out using Apple Pay. So, Dave, why is this a sea change?
Well, I would actually reframe it as a capitulation more than a sea change. I mean, you've got Walmart and Kroger. They're the last ones standing, and Kroger has finally pulled the plug, capitulating on consumer pressure to have Apple Pay at the point of sale and recognizing that as much as Kroger may like to, it cannot compete on tech. It had its ambitions with a wallet. It's not going to happen.
So given all that, Dave, when do you think Walmart's going to fall and start accepting Apple Pay?
Well, I think unlike Kroger, which I don't think has the tech chops necessarily, Walmart, I think, has made its ambitions in financial services clear for a long time. I mean, the original major player in alternative financial services is Walmart, where it still has a very large footprint. You know, It's had remittances, it's had prepaid, it's been a lifeline to the underbanked in this country. So it's got a real foundation there. And you know that it's ramped up its own fintech operations, has neobanking aspirations. Within that, it's already gotten that started by transitioning its branded prepaid cards into essentially neobank checking accounts. So it's got a lot going on there, and it does have Walmart Pay, which it may not be used to the extent that Apple Pay is used, but I think you do have some Walmart Pay loyalists that have bought into Walmart Pay. It's not just dead on arrival. And I think Walmart has a lot of the same ambitions from a retail standpoint that you could argue that Amazon and even Apple would have. So I don't think it's going to fail or fall for quite some time, frankly.
But it will eventually, right?
Well,
yeah.
I think if you're looking at how things look today, you could argue that at some point Walmart may also have to capitulate. But let's also take a look back. Walmart is the most aggressive retailer on the planet when it comes to guarding payments. It will shut Visa out. It will shut MasterCard out. It's done things like this. I mean, it goes to bat when it's about protecting margins and being able to increase its own market power.
So they don't feel any pressure from their own customers to offer this. That's not an issue, because that would be what they would react to in a different way, right?
Yeah, I think that's the long game here. You know, if you take a look at how well Apple is doing with younger generations and Walmart pivoting into a more affluent space, given its digital retail ambitions, that may come to pass. I mean, the Walmart customer is historically less affluent and less likely to own iPhones.
Right.
So it is not necessarily going to get the same kind of pressure to convert to Apple Pay like Kroger did, I think, for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go to the second headline. EU probe into Apple Pay could spur global anti-competition scrutiny. According to Bloomberg, Apple is under growing pressure after the European Commission asked retailers for more information regarding its antitrust investigation. It seems, Dave, that not everyone is excited about Apple Pay's sweet domination. Could this slow Apple Pay down?
That's very well put too, Rob.
Yeah.
Short answer is yes, it could slow it down. There's a juggernaut. It's called Apple Pay. It has more than 500 million global users. And one legislative body in the world has finally done something in order to approach its growing and, I'd say, disproportionate market power, reining it in via antitrust.
Yeah.
And that's certainly going to help other companies compete by opening up that NFC tap and pay capability. Google Pay, I think PayPal, because these are already large at scale wallets, would be able to benefit from that. So they could gain some ground, but you're really talking about that in light of Apple's growing ecosystem and all of the other levers it has to be able to engage customers and continue to grow.
Right, exactly. So just to sum up, I think that what we're saying is that the Kroger announcement is probably a capitulation, right? It's a sea change in that they're the last retailer aside from Walmart, but Walmart still stands alone, going to at least put up a fight for a little while. And that legislative bodies like the EU and in the US might also help to slow Apple Pay down, but I think it might have more to do with their iPhone and being able to allow people to use the tap to pay feature within the iPhone. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. You know, I'll get this wrong on the math, but I think Walmart sales is at least three times that of Kroger. I mean, it's the largest retailer in the world.
It's big, big, big.
And so it's a different animal. I would also add that I think there's definitely a lag in the U.S. The EU has always been a little more out front than the U.S. on antitrust and privacy. I don't see the same thing happening here, at least to the same degree, although you've got regulatory agencies rumbling about it.
That is true. In our next segment, Story by Numbers, we're going to pick up this thread a little more. In Story by Numbers, we pick a number or two that helps us dig deeper into the episode's topic. Today, for Story by Numbers, I want to focus on two numbers as it relates to Gen Z consumers, which we've talked about a little bit as it related to Walmart. The first number is really two numbers, 97% and 80%. We forecast that 97% of Gen Z consumers will have smartphones by 2026, and 80% of those phones will be Apple iPhones. How could Apple Pay's sweet domination break? Because I don't really see it.
That stat blows me away. I love it. I mean, that really encapsulates, I think, the work that its competitors have in front of themselves to court the generation that everybody wants to ensure is a part of their own ecosystems. You have Gen Z, which is digital first, digital natives. They like it easy. They like it seamless. Everything digital. They're mobile forward to the point of probably being physical exclusive to some extent. iPhone in hand. They love buy now, pay later, which of course Apple is rolling out, Apple Pay Later, and they want to save money. And you've got the Apple Savings account right there scooping up Gen Z funds. So frankly, I'm not sure I do either, barring some type of regulatory intervention, which I think is a difficult sell in the US. It's not the EU.
How could they intervene? Like, what's one thing that they could do that would enhance the competition in digital wallets?
I think that one avenue is kind of through the back door of ensuring that customers' data privacy is respected. That's something the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is taking a look at. And the agency has also at least put a couple of lines down about market power in Apple and big tech market power in general. It just has yet to unfold.
What about access to some of the technology that makes their products better?
I think the question would be whether or not there are entities that are excluded from using that technology. So that should certainly be on the regulatory agenda. That's really not something that I've heard a lot about, though. It's not as if Apple is excluding others from prepared proprietary technology here in the U.S. There is the NFC issue, but that's more of an outlier.
Okay. My next number is $1 billion. And that's how much Apple's new savings accounts swept up in deposits in 4 days. Dave, Apple Pay is part of a much larger ecosystem, and you mentioned it just before, but can we go through a little bit about why the ecosystem itself is important?
What a great stat. I mean, amazing growth there. I mean, the ecosystem, and this is, I would look a little more generally out there, not just Apple, but you have Venmo, you have PayPal, you have Google, you have Cash App. These are all essentially either originally P2P systems, even Apple, or mobile-based systems that continue to grow and grow and grow and grow. And they're tethering broader and deeper usage by building out product sets within that ecosystem. And that's how they're ultimately growing. So, you know, you have Apple Pay that's been around for almost 10 years now, but you have over time layering in products to broaden and deepen the engagement. Most recently, this savings account play. But before that, you've got the Apple Cash prepaid card, you've got P2P, you've got the Apple Card.
Now you have Apple Pay later, you have the savings accounts now.
Exactly.
It all works within the Apple Wallet. Dan Van Dyke and I talked about this a long time ago, that that's going to be a super app.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is a super app, I think. It's the Western world's version of the most advanced super app, in my opinion. I think PayPal, arguably, as well. But the savings account, too, you're looking at an ecosystem that in and itself becomes, I think, an argument for market power. And then you have the products that individually may not necessarily compete or outcompete. Apple Card doesn't have the volume probably that the Chase Sapphire cards do yet. It's not the biggest card.
Right.
But it's just one more spoke in that wheel. And with the savings account, you've got no fees and above 4% APR. You also have this great little hook that you have to be an Apple Card holder.
When they do that, and this really looks at the profile of the audience that they're trying to capture with the product, is that they're really looking at a much more affluent customer when they're associating a credit card to a savings account. So that the audience that they're getting today are much more affluent in terms of the savings account. And I think what we should focus on is how are they going to expand on that? In other words, it's kind of easy pickings to get some of that money up front because of the curiosity, the high interest rates. But what other kinds of financial products they begin to offer, or what relationships they develop with other financial service partners, Goldman being one that they've really partnered with around the savings account, for example, is really going to tell how fast and far they want to get into FinServe.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I would just reiterate the affluent skew here. That's always been Apple's bread and butter. Its ecosystem is growing beyond affluence, of course, as it grows in scale. But you're looking at being able to leverage a low-risk, affluent consumer.
Why I say it's going to change is because of what we've been talking about in Story by Numbers. And I'll use this as a transition to our next one, which we're going to talk about this even more. Is that 97% of Gen Z consumers are going to have smartphones and 80% iPhones in 2026. And what that means is that 97% of Gen Z consumers won't all be affluent in 2026, right? They reach a much broader audience with their technology product. And once they start to push into other financial services, they're going to reach into more mass market types of financial service products, Apple Pay later, as an example of that. And that really brings us to our final segment. We've come up with this new format. We're calling it What If. I state a future outcome and we discuss what ifs, assuming that future outcome is true. So let's see. The first one is Apple expands its Apple Card audience in the next 3 years. So just what I've been saying, and provides significant advantages to its customers, either the best customer experience, the best rates, flexibility to use it with Apple Pay over other cards. In other words, to make the Apple Card the Apple Pay card of choice. What if Apple did that? So I'm going to stick to my format. How would big issuers react?
With a fair amount of disappointment and maybe a little bit of resentment.
But what would they do on the, we're going to counter that move with this one?
I think what the best playbook that I would look at is how issuers have handled the Amazon. You know, it has its own ecosystem, right? Yep. It's a shopping ecosystem. And you have a Synchrony issued private label card. That's an Amazon card. And you have a Chase co-branded Amazon card. So Chase has been riding Amazon's growth for years through that co-brand.
Chase's, they were the original card, right, with Amazon. The Synchrony Amazon private label card is newer than the Chase card. Isn't that right?
I think it's the other way around.
Oh, really?
But they've both been around for some time. All right. And, you know, what you have there is you have, what, at this point, $400 billion that other issuers are shut out of in Apple sales, unless they get their cards into the Amazon wallet. So they do this in a couple of ways. You know, points redemptions, for instance. I don't know if you've ever done this. I don't, because they shave off the value of the points when you redeem this way. But if you have a Discover card, you have these any number of other cards, they've partnered with Amazon to go through the back door. You can redeem points at Amazon. That allows that issuer through the back door and into the wallet where hopefully that credit card holder doesn't forget all about the Discover card. So that's one way to do it.
Okay.
You can ratchet up the rewards, of course. A lot of people think that ends up being a losing proposition, war by attrition.
It also focuses in on a small segment of the credit card population, which is the best rewards go to the most affluent consumers.
Well, and or to the most loyal. You know, I mean, as a loyalty play, but there is the option to do that as well. But you are inevitably looking at being marginalized, I think. And you can look at that again. That's why Venmo now has a Venmo credit card. I mean, they want to be able to capture that ecosystem revenue. Right. These are cards, ultimately, including Apple Card, that I think are the most competitive threat to bank branded cards by far. They're growing outside of the banking ecosystem. They're growing via these companies that are going to potentially disintermediate the banks. So it's a big threat. It's not just Apple.
Right. Venmo's a verb.
Venmo's a verb.
Chase isn't a verb.
No.
Not in that context.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to go back, Rob. I actually have a different take briefly. I think Apple may stick with the affluent SKU. Its buy now, pay later product is also more affluent skewing in some ways than some may realize out there. And there's other avenues beyond consumer banking that they can explore. There's wealth management and other things that I think could be on the table. You know, back to your question, what could derail this juggernaut? I'm not sure, other than some kind of regulatory intervention. And that goes for other kind of financial services past that we haven't even gotten into.
Right. Or something comes along that unseats the iPhone as people's predominant communication device, which we don't see today. But, you know, 20 years ago, maybe we didn't see the iPhone either.
Some kind of technological change that shifts the landscape. Yeah.
Right. I think that would be one. The second what if is the EU and US regulators find Apple Pay is an anti-competitive digital wallet and forces Apple to make changes to open up competition. What if regulators tell Apple they have to let others use the NRC?
I think the EU has opened that door by saying that they can't block access. The one way I would look at it is that, at least in the US, certainly, they're not going to force consumers to choose anything. You know, they can provide the choice. This reminds me of a discussion you and I had back several months ago about the payment networks and interchange, you know, and the way some of that has been structured, you know, where you can help facilitate choice. Something that forces choice, I think, is probably dead on arrival at a regulatory level anyway.
What if, you know, when you tap and you use Apple Pay, it just gets processed? What if regulators tell Apple that instead of just sort of tapping and going, there's a little intermediate button, which is you have to present all of the cards loaded in the digital wallet so that you can choose which card to pay this particular transaction with?
I don't see it happening. I think it's a great idea if you don't want Apple to continue to kind of churn away at the competition.
Yeah.
I think that consumers do have the choice of including their card of choice. That would be the first thing that Apple would say. I mean, I can put any card I want in that wallet. And if I'm choosing the Apple card over the others, and it's because I'm obtaining some kind of competitive benefit.
Like a cash reward, cash back
reward. Yeah, like 3% cash back.
On all transactions.
Then I don't see that there's an argument there. I think that is where, and this is maybe into just the antitrust realm of market power itself, you go back to the power of the ecosystem. I don't think a product-based focus here is necessarily the route to argue against Apple. It's the power of the ecosystem itself and the market power that invariably has over consumers. The whole ambit of products, in addition to all of that data that they can get from every consumer that uses that wallet. That's actually why they're happy to say, we're not going to share third-party data with other marketers. Why would they want to do that?
They don't have to.
Well, they want to use it.
Yeah. So Dave, that's all the time that we have for What If? And I think that this was a really good exercise. We talked a lot about how big issuers might react to anything that could be an anti-competitive advantage that Apple has. And also what would happen if the regulators started to step in and force Apple to change or open up its product, which might be also a challenge for them. So Dave, thank you so much for joining us today. It was, as always, a ton of fun.
Yeah, great to be here, Rob. I love the new format. And yeah. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. I'll speak to you later.
Okie doke.
I want to thank everyone for listening to the Banking and Payment Show, an eMarketer podcast sponsored by TransUnion's True Audience Credit Informed Marketing Solutions. Also, thank you to our editor, Todd. In today's episode, we referenced two articles we recently published on Apple Pay and data from our new Mobile Proximity Payments Forecast Report. We have links in the show notes. Our next episode is on June 13th, and you'll not want to miss it. See you then.